Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 21st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Restrictions Dropped at Hot Shots. Peace officers had been stationed at Barr during service hours for a seven-month period. By Luke Diaz, staff writer. After months of back and forth, Hot Shots and its owner David Chin have achieved victory and secured a specific use designation without any additional restrictions. This marks the conclusion of a seven-month period wherein the bar was forced to have peace officers stationed during service hours. Hot Shots was granted an SUD by City Council on June 10th. However, City Council was concerned about a high number of incident reports in the area and felt that continuing to allow alcohol sales would lead to continued incidents. As such, it amended the SUD so that peace officers would be stationed at the bar for a seven-month period, during which they would collect incident reports. Two security guards were stationed at the bar Fridays and Saturdays from 9 p.m. to 1:45 a.m. On August 12th, following a two-month review, there was a proposal to have this updated so that security guards stationed would be stationed from Tuesday to Saturday every week from 9 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. But City Council denied this idea September 9th. City's staff report shows that from June 2025 to January 2026, there were 20 incidents reported, four of which involved physical violence, compared to the other bars on the same block. Double Bar Saloon with 24 incidents and The Bar with 10. From January to July 2025, there were 36 incidents reported at Hot Shots. Staff said these numbers are likely inflated because these three locations occasionally report the same incident, creating duplicates. After viewing police reports ahead of the meeting, Chin told council he believes the 20-incident figure is actually closer to 9. When I had to get police officers, that really hurt me bad, Chin said. My business went down so bad. I don't have any pool players anymore, you know, and there's really not anything going on in my bar. There's no violence or anything. That's all happening outside. Just because it's around my area and my building, they deduct a point from me when I don't even know it's outside. Both Chin and his attorney, Patrick Cordero, claimed there might have been a third party deliberately inflating incident reports by making police calls, but that calls stopped when peace officers were installed. While there is no way to directly verify this, city staff did say it struck police patrols from the numbers. Many residents rallied behind Chin at the city council meeting, each giving their own personal account of visiting the bar and listing different reasons as to why they wanted the peace officers to be removed, many of which city council admitted they now agree with. Notably absent from the comment was the next-door BTA oil producers, which originally had objected to the SUD because of incidents allegedly spilling over into their private parking lot. According to Chin, BTA had been highly receptive of the changes Hot Shots has made during the process. This place is more than a business, said Iris Cervantes. For many of us, this bar is a safe and welcoming environment. It's where friendships have been built, memories have been made, and where people from all walks of life felt comfortable being themselves. I truly believe this bar deserves a chance to stay open and continuing what exists, serving the community, supporting locals, and giving people a place to call home. During public comment, Several residents said requiring hotshots to have peace officers at the bar was hypocritical, because several other bars around town have similar incident report numbers but don't have the same security requirement. Chin also had previously hired his own security personnel, which the city was able to verify ahead of the meeting. There are two pages, about a page and a quarter of incident reports at Hotshots, Cordero said. But for Fair to Midland, that's the next four pages. Why aren't they up here? Rocking Rodeo has three pages, and I don't see anyone calling them up here and telling them they need to get police officers. Tailgate, which is only open for events, is a page and a half. Fast Freddy's is two full pages. Torino's a page and three quarters. Detour is a page and a half. Double Bar has about the same amount we do. I think the only places that have less incidents on my report are the Angry Armadillo and Triple Threat. It just feels like we're being picked on. What you do to one, you do to all. There are incidents that are moved outside, handled outside, and usually squashed instantly, said Tyler Norton, who says that occasionally he does DJ work for Hotshots on weekends. The bar staff are always vigilant, walking around, checking on people. There's times when I see Dave Chin walk around the bar about four or five times checking on people. Very rarely have I seen PD come around. I came from Austin 5 years ago, and on 6th Street, there were shootings all the time. This place has nothing like that. Many people also vouched for Chin and his family. Chin's family has run Hotshots for 25 years across three generations. I've been visiting his establishment for at least the last 7 years, said Melissa Vasquez. They personally get to know each and every individual. He comes and speaks to my husband, and personally greets us, shakes our hands, asks us how we're doing. But not just us. It's almost every customer that walks in there. This is a person who doesn't just own a bar, said Phelan Franklin. He looks out for the people in it. Makes sure single women get to their cars at night, calls Ubers for customers who've had too much to drink. Not because he has to, but because he notices. He pays attention and genuinely cares about their well-being. If you sit at his bar long enough, you'll have plenty of stories, not just about business, but about struggles, anything he's gone through in life. There's no judgment there, just conversation, laughter, and connection. Some of the commenters, such as Michaela Emmert and Marcus Oakley, also mentioned rumors that they heard regarding the possibility of tearing down the Hotshots building and building additional parking space there. The city denied that this was ever a possibility. City Council also agreed it needs to be more consistent with implementing peace officers in the future for bars, and that it needs to control potential hotspots where crime is likely to emerge. When I listen to all of this, I hear consistency and increased enforcement, Mayor Lori Blong said. I think that those are things that benefit the entire community of Midland and help us to keep things fair and equitable. I have spoken with Mr. Chin before on this, and I asked him to do something, and he did it. And I greatly appreciate that, Councilman-at-Large John Burkholder said. I would tell you to keep up the work that you're doing. It's very noticeable, to me and to quite a few other people. I do appreciate you guys going through the process, but at the same time, I don't feel like y'all should have had to go through that process, Councilman John Norman said. Just like everyone else is saying, it's an establishment that's been there for a long time without any problems and things of that nature. I don't think we should make them have to do it and not do it for everyone else. I do not think that we should be requiring security, especially taxing them, when we have other top 10 bars in incident reports like Rock and Rodeo, where the SUDs have no conditions, Councilman Jack Ladd said. I think we should treat everyone similarly. Midland City Council unanimously approved the motion to remove the peace officer's requirement, with the exception of Councilwoman-at-Large Robin Poole, who was absent from the meeting and had previously stated she would not take a stance on the matter to avoid conflicts of interest. Hotshot's SUD expires June 10, 2027, after which it will need to reapply to renew it. We've learned a lot as a council and city government because of your feedback and input and working through this with us, Councilman Brian Stubbs said. Highlighting the work you have done is where we need to move forward. I do greatly see and appreciate the impact you've made, a positive impact on this area, by working with this. So thank you very much for all you've done. This article is entitled Manor Park Celebrates Beginning of $31 Million Revamp by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Manor Park hosted a groundbreaking ceremony for its Age of Renewal capital project, marking the beginning of a transformative investment in the future of seniors living in Midland. The ceremony was held January 15th in front of what will soon be the Welcome Center on Manor Park's campus. Residents, donors, board members, community leaders, and staff joined the ceremony to celebrate the milestone and commemorate more than 3 years of planning and fundraising. The ceremony included remarks from Manor Park leadership, donor recognition, music from the Silver Notes resident choir, and the formal groundbreaking. Carmen Bryant, chair of the Manor Park Board of Directors, welcomed attendees and thanked the individuals and organizations who supported the project. This project represents our commitment to ensure Manor Park continues serving Midland for generations to come, Bryant said. The Age of Renewal reflects thoughtful planning, strong leadership, and incredible generosity of this community. Stephen Nelson, president and CEO of Manor Park, spoke about the background and vision for the project. The Age of Renewal capital project will modernize our campus, improve wellness and educational spaces, and position Manor Park to serve current and future residents for the next 40 years and beyond, Nelson said. This project is about renewal of buildings, of purpose, and of community. In 1970, Trinity Towers opened its doors as Midland's first retirement community on 5 acres at 2800 West Illinois Avenue. In 1982, a groundbreaking ceremony was held for Manor Park's new campus in West Midland on 40 acres of land donated by the Jesse Wallace Estate. Since 1970, Manor Park's current campus has grown to 85 acres, with several original buildings now more than 40 years old. Key elements of the Age of Renewal project include the removal of the Maybe Center, repurposing of the Younger Center, and the creation of updated spaces with a strong focus on wellness and education. Construction and demolition will begin immediately and are expected to take 15 to 18 months. Manor Park will share construction updates and photos on its website and will also offer hard hat tours as the project progresses. Amanda Ellis, Director of Fund Development, announced that the Age of Renewal capital campaign raised $31 million from 134 donors, exceeding the original goal and covering increased construction costs. This project would not be possible without the extraordinary philanthropic spirit of Midland, Ellis said. From foundations and corporations to individuals and even Manor Park residents themselves, the support has been overwhelming. Key donors were recognized during the groundbreaking ceremony, including the lead donor, the J.E. and L.E. Maybe Foundation, whose challenge grant helped drive the campaign to completion. Additional major supporters include the Scarborough Foundation, FMH Foundation, Manor Park Foundation, Warren Charitable Foundation, Permian Basin Area Foundation, Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust, Dennis and Laquita Johnson, Abel Hanger Foundation, Doug Scarborough, Beale Foundation, and many others. This article is entitled, Midland College Announces Free Cafe Connect Interactive Services, by Trevor Hawes, editor. Midland College has announced its 2026 lineup of free interactive workshops for 2026. As part of its Cafe Connect program, the community is invited to connect, learn, and explore new interests through a series of one-day interactive workshops that are available free of charge. Cafe Connect is about creating inviting moments where learning feels natural and enjoyable, said Corey Chisholm, Director of Community Programs at Midland College. These workshops give our community a chance to step away from their routine, try something new, and connect with others in a way that's engaging, approachable, and fun. It's about removing barriers and opening doors to experiences that spark curiosity and confidence. To learn more and to register for classes, visit the Cafe Connect page at midland.edu. Here's a rundown of this year's workshops. Step and Salsa Workshop. Get ready to move to the vibrant beats of Latin music in this dynamic salsa workshop. Participants will explore fundamental salsa steps, spins, and coordination techniques designed to build confidence and rhythm on the dance floor. This high-energy session is perfect for beginners and those looking to sharpen their moves. Runs 6 to 7:30 p.m. Thursday. Craft Workshop. This hands-on craft workshop invites participants to explore creativity and self-expression in a welcoming environment. Open to all skill levels, the session includes all materials needed to create a unique, handmade piece to take home. Runs 9:30 to 11 a.m. February 3rd. Speakeasy. A casual chat on public speaking. This relaxed one-hour coffee chat offers an approachable introduction to public speaking. Through guided conversation, participants will gain tips to feel more comfortable using their voice, sharing ideas, and speaking in front of others. The session also provides a preview of a 6-week public speaking course beginning March 23rd. Focused on building confidence, structure, and real-world speaking skills. Runs 5:30 to 7 p.m. March 19th. WaterWise. This workshop is in conjunction with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension and will focus on practical, everyday strategies for smarter water use and sustainability. Runs 9 a.m. to noon, April 18th. Spring Yoga Journey. Refresh your mind, body, and spirit with this immersive spring yoga workshop. Designed for all levels, the session combines gentle flows, mindful breathing, and restorative practices to help reduce stress, increase flexibility, and embrace the energy of the season. Participants will leave feeling grounded, recharged, and renewed. Runs 10 to 11:30 a.m. May 6th. This article is entitled, Odessa Exhibit Celebrates Texas Juneteenth Rodeos. Soul Circuit Spotlights Legacy of Black Cowboys Through Black and White Photos. By B. K. Richter, staff writer. Odessa. Odessa Arts has partnered with the Black Cultural Council of Odessa to bring Soul Circuit Juneteenth Rodeos in Texas by photographer Sarah Bird. The exhibit is organized by the Meal Cochran House Museum and presented in partnership with Humanities Texas, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The cultural exhibit transports the viewer to the late 1970s, when black communities throughout Texas organized local rodeos for cowboys and cowgirls outside of the mainstream white-sponsored circuits. These events were known as the Soul Circuit, Odessa Arts said. The Soul Circuit was a thriving network of small-town rodeos that played a crucial role in perpetrating and sustaining the more than 200-year lineage of black cowboys in America. The celebrations showcased the full arc of a Juneteenth rodeo, from early morning preparations to late-night celebrations, highlighting themes of community, resilience, and cultural pride, Odessa Arts said. This exhibit features 43 black-and-white photographs that take viewers along the full day that featured a Juneteenth rodeo. The exhibit will be available for viewing at the Gertrude Bruce Cultural Center until February 15th. The exhibit is open from 2 to 4 p.m. on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Seeing this gallery is more about family, said Odessa Arts Development Director Anna Cristina Navarro. The rodeo is always like a business from that point of view. But in this case, for them, the black cowboys, it is more about family. It's more about having fun. Additionally, Navarro commented that Bird, a renowned novelist and photographer, took the images because she fell in love with the culture, the history, the entertainment, and the family union of the black rodeos. It is sentimental if you want to see it that way, she explained. The presentation is made possible in part through funding from the Tehemas Foundation. This article is entitled Taking Flight Turns Gallery into Airborne Escape by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Stepping into the Museum of the Southwest's newest exhibition feels less like a museum gallery and more like an airplane cabin at 30,000 feet. In Taking Flight, artist Jenny Stubblefield transforms round panels into plane windows, offering visitors an escape from the turbulence of everyday life. The exhibition explores landscape from an extraordinary point of view, thousands of feet above the ground, and is inspired by Stubblefield's ongoing exploration through travel. Stubblefield sees herself as an aerial landscape painter, savoring in the delicate dance between abstraction and realism. Her favorite muse is an aerial vantage point, capturing vast landscapes from above. She currently resides in San Antonio and is a native of Kentucky, where her love of the landscape arose. She was classically trained in painting and printmaking at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts and received her degree from the University of Pennsylvania. Artists observe and experience the world differently, more analytically and emotionally. Finding moments of inspiration, question, wonderment, and beauty in places where most don't even notice, Stubblefield said in an artist statement. Artists display creations of vitality, curiosities, inventive ways of seeing, experimenting, reminding their viewers to slow down and savor this human experience, even for just a moment. World from Above. Taking Flight presents a thoughtfully curated selection of works from the last 5 years, highlighting Stubblefield's ongoing exploration through travel. Stubblefield said that the exhibit started during COVID, when everyone was at home for the quarantine. I was already doing aerial landscape painting, but a lot of them were fields and rivers and were done on a square composition, Stubblefield told the Reporter Telegram. When COVID happened and we got stuck at home, I found an art supply store that was selling round panels, and I just fell in love with them. She started by painting clouds and then later transitioned to larger formats and larger escapes, both land and sky. She added that she also painted rivers, which would include the reflection of the sky and the clouds in the river, playing between land and sky. Stubblefield said that while looking for inspiration, she discovered she had more than 1,500 photographs from the airplane window in her phone over the past 10 years. Portals. That's how it all came together. It was the desire of wanting to leave, to fly, to travel, while we were all stuck, Stubblefield said. I wanted to create these portals, or these windows, that people could look into and feel like they were flying or going somewhere. She added that she wanted people to feel like they are floating or flying, and that the round panels give the illusion of looking through a portal or window. It has a very light, floaty, refreshing, nice feeling to it, Stubblefield said. I think with what's going on in the world right now, how things are in lots of turmoil and people are under duress, it's a nice feeling, a nice little escape and enjoyment of something beautiful. The Museum of the Southwest hosted a preview party for the new exhibition, and many members expressed amazement at the oil paintings on display, making comments to each other about how the paintings look like pictures from airplane windows. It's nice to see that people see the artwork the way you intended to see it, and they have such enjoyment, Stubblefield said. It just really fills my heart that I was able to communicate those types of feelings and emotions to them. Stubblefield said she's grateful to the Museum of the Southwest staff, and that working with them has been a blessing. Taking Flight will be on view to the public through April 5th at the Mary B. Kennedy Gallery of the Museum of the Southwest. The campus is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday to Saturday and 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. This article is entitled City Offers Beale Park Update with Photos of Renovations by Luke Diaz, staff writer. The City of Midland has provided an update on the ongoing Beale Park renovations. On social media, it recently shared photos detailing some of the new soccer fields that will headline the renovations. Centermost in the pictures are two youth soccer fields and two full-size soccer fields, as well as a new building and walking paths. The city has stated that it hopes to turn Beale Park into a hub of soccer activity, particularly youth sports, in West Texas. Once completed, the project will feature 63 total soccer fields, 2,000 parking spaces, 15 RV spaces, an amphitheater, a splash park, a playground, disc golf, and other amenities. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Henry Hub Prices May Ease, Then Soar. After 2025 rebound, expect supply-demand fluctuations in next 2 years. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Wholesale natural gas prices in 2025 rebounded from record lows seen in 2024, according to the Energy Information Administration. The EIA reported that in 2025, the wholesale U.S. natural gas spot price at the national benchmark Henry Hub in Louisiana averaged $3.52 per million British thermal units, MMBTU, based on data from LSEG data. The 2025 average Henry Hub natural gas spot price increased 56% from the 2024 annual average, which, when adjusted for inflation, was the lowest on record. On a daily basis, the Henry Hub natural gas spot price ranged from $2.65 per MMBTU to $9.86 per MMBTU, reflecting a narrower range of daily prices compared with the previous year. In its January short-term energy outlook, EIA analysts expect the natural gas spot price at the Henry Hub to decrease about 2%, to just under $3.50 per million British thermal units in 2026, before rising sharply in 2027 to just under $4.60 per MMBTU. Analysts attribute the slight 2026 decrease to annual supply growth keeping pace with demand growth over the year. For 2027, analysts forecast annual average spot prices will soar 33%, as demand growth rises faster than supply growth, driven mainly by more feed gas demand from U.S. liquefied natural gas export facilities, reducing the natural gas in storage. This year, natural gas supply growth is expected to outpace demand growth by 500 million cubic feet per day, but then fall behind by 1.6 billion cubic feet per day in 2027. Analysts expect demand, which includes exports, will increase by less than 1%, about 600 million cubic feet per day, while supply, which includes imports, will increase by nearly 1%, about 1.1 billion cubic feet per day. Analysts expect this difference to reverse in 2027 as demand growth, up 2.5 billion cubic feet per day, exceeds supply growth, 900 million cubic feet per day. U.S. natural gas spot prices at most major trading hubs increased in 2025, except at the Northwest Sumas Point near the U.S.-Canada border. Two hubs in the Northeast, Algonquin City Gate near Boston and Transco Zone 6NY near New York City, had price increases that were much more than Henry Hub's $1.33 per million BTU increase in 2025, according to data from Natural Gas Intelligence. Analysts' forecast for domestic consumption of natural gas remains relatively flat in both years, as decreases in consumption in the industrial, commercial, and residential sectors are offset by increases in consumption in the electric power sector. As natural gas demand outpaces supply, analysts expect storage inventories will gradually move below the rolling five-year average over its forecast. By comparison, storage levels had been relatively robust in 2024 and 2025, with inventories remaining 1.7% above the five-year 2020-24 average at the close of December 2025. This is the Life Tributes column. Leanne Jane Brenner. September 7, 1935 to January 15, 2026. Leanne Jane Brenner went home to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on January 15, 2026. Leanne was born on September 7, 1935 to Ed and Clella Graber on a wheat farm near Arlington, Kansas. She had a sister, Belva June. A visitation will begin at 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 22nd, with the rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral mass will take place at 2 p.m. Friday, January 23rd at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Leanne was preceded in death by her parents, Ed and Clella Garber, her sister Belva June, her husband Harold Brenner, and her grandson Gregory Brenner. Leanne is survived by her four children, David and Mary Brenner of Edmond, Oklahoma, Mike and Patsy Brenner of Lubbock, Danny and Connie Brenner of Tyler, and Clay and Cheryl Cox of Tuscola, Texas, nine grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Midland College or Alpha Omega Hospice in Abilene. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Winnie Andrews O'Brien, October 29, 1927 to January 4, 2026. Winnie Andrews O'Brien passed away January 4, 2026 in Houston. Born October 29, 1927 in Lottie, Louisiana, Winnie lived a full life and to the end marveled at how her world had changed in almost a century. One of 12 children born to her parents Julius Wesley Andrews and Edna Blanchard Andrews, Winnie described her childhood as simple but pleasant, remembering the early years when the family home had no running water and everyone had chores to do. After graduating as salutatorian of her high school, Winnie attended Louisiana State University, where she not only earned her degree, but met the love of her life, T.B. O'Brien, to whom she was married for 72 years, before his death in 2019. They lived in Midland for almost 50 years. In 2017, the O'Briens moved back to Houston. In her later years, Winnie spoke with pride of her 3 children, 8 grandchildren, and 23 great-grandchildren. She always went to great lengths to make their lives better. Winnie is survived by only one sibling, Jean A. Lafleur of Alexandria, Louisiana. She is also survived by her 3 children, Elizabeth May, Gwen Emmett, husband Ed, Tom O'Brien, wife Karen, 8 grandchildren, and 23 great-grandchildren. A graveside service is planned for Saturday, January 24th at 2 p.m. at Rosewood Funeral Home, 2602 South Houston Avenue, Humble, Texas. Following the service, all are invited to gather at the home of Adrienne and William Vanderblumen. If you wish to honor her in a special way, please give to the charity of your choice in her name. Carol Hinkle. Carol Hinkle, 86, of Midland, passed away January 14th. The family will hold a private service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 22nd. Event complex logs 214,000 visitors. A report says Midland County Horseshoes' total revenue hits nearly $850,000. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland County Commissioners on Thursday received the Midland County Horseshoes annual report for a year that included more than 200 events and welcomed more than 200,000 visitors. There are also several upcoming projects. According to Director Stephen Garcia, the Horseshoe hosted 213 events with more than 214,000 attendees. Total revenue was $847,000. Garcia was appointed as director in February 2025 and was subsequently promoted to director after being hired as an assistant director. Quote, "One of the things we came up with and initiated this year was a new mission statement facility, and that was our mission, to drive economic growth and pride in Midland County through a versatile, inclusive space that supports local enterprise and public engagement," Garcia told commissioners. "We made some changes that continued emphasis on customer satisfaction. This year, we also made some changes to policy," end quote. Garcia said the Horseshoe is trying to grow its customer base organically through repeat customers and by bringing in more events to help build the number of events per year. Quote, "We continued with citizen-driven events, and we made a focus on events that were long-term, over multiple days, over the weekends, to help with the area businesses, to help out with hotels and restaurants, because we want to make sure that other businesses are gaining off of our facility. We are driving the Midland County economy," Garcia said. The Horseshoe continued to engage with organizations such as Visit Midland, the Midland Chamber of Commerce, and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Quote, "We hosted events that had high occupancy in our hotel base, and again, that was trying to build economy throughout the city and county as well," he said. Another focus was growing events with an emphasis on bringing in multiple-day events to the Horseshoe. Quote, "We had some lost event days this year, and that was due to a roofing project that we had in the Horseshoe," Garcia told commissioners. "We lost 46 days this year due to that," end quote. He explained that attendance for events in the county's venue included more than 214,000 people, and that contract revenue from events was more than $822,000. Quote, "If you have a customer that has a contracted event and they bring in vendors or just general patrons that are coming to see it, they are not going to be responsible for paying for RV spaces or stalls," Garcia explained. "And that brought in an additional $25,000 to us. So, total realized income, this is money that came in altogether combined, just a little under $847,000, end quote. Another improvement, Garcia said, was initiated this year, is a post-event survey to all contract holders. Quote, "We look at overall satisfaction, facility quality, and amenities," Garcia said. "We also use Google reviews, and that is something that's just not open to contract holders, but anybody who wants to go online and make a review." Currently, Garcia said the Horseshoe is sitting at 4.5 out of 5 stars on the Google review platform. Quote, "We feel pretty good about how we are sitting right now in customer satisfaction," he said. "The next thing we want to look at is our social interaction or social media. And we look at two major sources, which are Facebook and Instagram," end quote. For social media visits, Garcia told commissioners that the Horseshoe increased from more than 23,000 visits to more than 42,000, an 83% increase over the past year. Another metric was the interactions, which have also increased significantly. Quote, "This is something we really like because this is where our customers are," he explained. "This is where they are reaching out, and they are looking at the page to constantly see what's going on, what's coming up, and what they can attend," end quote. Commissioner Stephen Valeda thanked Garcia for his service and his communication. Quote, "I appreciate the Horseshoe being back under the court," he emphasized. "When I get a complaint, I usually call you, and you are like, well, here's a solution for that. There's a lot of easy communication. You are doing an excellent job and service to our community," end quote. Garcia said that with some of the policy changes that the Horseshoe has implemented, he knows that the county is giving money back to customers. Quote, "We know we are leaving money on the table," he said, "but we can actually recruit back to us, and that's something more. We want to make sure that we bring back a lot of the goodwill and to make sure that the citizens have a better feeling about the facility as we grow a little bit more," end quote. API says demand decade for oil and gas is close. An executive says people need to understand how important it is. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin residents this week celebrated the iconic oil and gas employees with an event sponsored by the American Petroleum Institute and Petroleum Strategic Partnership. The event featured food and a performance by Roger Krieger. Quote, "This series kicked off in November," related Mike Summers, president and chief executive officer of the API in Midland for the celebration, and to moderate a question-and-answer session with Aaron Hunter, President Permian with ConocoPhillips, at the Midland Chamber of Commerce State of Oil and Gas Luncheon. It began with the television series Landman, he said. The association has formed a partnership with the television show, running ads describing real landmen during the episodes, he said. Quote, "We were a little concerned with how the industry would be portrayed, but we realized it would be a positive view," Summers said. He said he's pleased to bring the celebration to Midland, the heart of oil and gas. "We felt it was time to celebrate oil and gas. Everybody uses oil and gas, but only 1% work in the industry. People need to understand how important it is," end quote. Summers continued, quote, "We're witnessing a change in perception. People are realizing its importance. Landman is a reflection of that realization. Oil and gas are important, and they're here to stay," end quote. In fact, he said, API sees the world on the precipice of a demand decade, with demand expected to rise 50% over the decade, end quote. Quote, "We see it even in D.C., even in politicians who opposed oil and gas. Even California Governor Gavin Newsom has approved drilling permits in Bakersfield. It's not just California, it's all over. New York is about to build a pipeline transporting natural gas from Pennsylvania to New York," he said. "There has been a sharp decline in crude prices over the last year, and oil field activity has trended lower for the last couple of years." Summers said the industry is used to ups and downs and currently employs a resilient workforce, and oil companies are well capitalized. Quote, "The rig count no longer gives an accurate view of the industry. The industry is much more efficient. The rig count is down, but production is up," he said, citing efficiency gains and technological advances. Still, he acknowledged the industry can still be impacted by international markets, most recently Venezuela and Iran. Combined oil production from the two nations doesn't even come close to U.S. output or even Permian Basin output, he said. Quote, "The U.S. will be the world energy leader, and that's good for national and energy security," Summers said. Youth football team recognized for title win. 12-under team defeated others from Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia. The story was written by Luke Diaz. The West Texas Buffs, a youth football team that has participated in the nationwide American Youth Football, or AYF, for the last 3 years, recently won the AYF's 12-under division championship. In recognition for this, the team was honored by Midland City Council with a proclamation and some time off from school. Quote, "What makes this team special is that they weren't made up of all-stars," said Councilman John Norman. "They've been playing together for a while, and nobody can tell me we don't have the talent out here in West Texas," end quote. Coached by Simon Cobos, the 12-under team has participated in a variety of competitions over the last several months, including one in Las Vegas, culminating in the Division II National Championship Tournament, where they served as the representative for the Desert Mountain region. The tournament was held during the first half of December in Naples, Florida. There, the Buffs defeated teams from Pennsylvania and Ohio before defeating West Virginia in the championship game. Quote, "You don't just show up to the championship and win," said Mayor Lori Blong. "You got to put in the work day after day after day, practicing and doing all of that work in advance. So thank you for what you've done and for the way that you've represented our community." End quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 22nd. Kenneth L. Zoller died November 26th in Lufkin, Texas, at the age of 71. Ken was born on January 25th, 1954, in Midland, the middle child to Marvin Zoller and Sue Elliott Zoller. The family moved briefly to Roswell and Amarillo before returning to Midland in 1960. He graduated from Midland High School in 1972. After graduating from the University of Texas in 1976, Ken returned from Austin to Midland and began his career as a CPA in public practice, then for family oil and gas companies. He retired in 2021 as the chief financial officer for H.L. Brown Operating. He served on charitable boards for many causes close to his heart. Ken met his wife of 45 years, Cindy, in downtown Midland on their lunch break in 1979. They married in 1980 and welcomed daughters Catherine and Kimberly in 1985 and 1988. Ken was preceded in death by his parents, Marvin Zoller and Sue Elliott Zoller, his brother, Bruce Zoller, and his nephew, Kenny Zoller. He is survived by his wife, Cindy Zoller of Midland, daughter Catherine Zoller Brown, and husband Michael of Cedar Creek, daughter Kimberly Zoller of Midland, sister Tanya Zoller Cruz, and husband Jim of Burney, Texas, as well as several nieces and nephews. A celebration of Ken's life will be held on Saturday, January 24th at 2 o'clock at the branch at NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to High Sky Children's Ranch, Sibley Nature Center, and the Big Bend Natural History Association. Tilda Stewart Jones, born March 21, 1944, passed away peacefully on January 16th at the age of 81 in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where she lived with her daughter and son-in-law, Dwight and Jeanette Pope. Born and raised in Midland, Texas, Tilda enjoyed many friendships and employments until finding her calling as a certified nurse's aide. She married Daniel L. Jones and enjoyed many years traveling and living in Midland. She is survived by her children, Frank James, wife Dana, Charlotte Schrum and her husband William, Jeanette Pope and her husband Dwight. Also survived by her sister-in-law, Cecilia Stewart, and several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, Benjamin and Annie Bell Stewart, daughter Donna Gail James, sister Martha Hector, brother James Eldon Stewart, her husband Daniel L. Jones, and her daughter Verna Ann James. Burial will be at Serenity Memorial Gardens on Thursday, January 22nd at 1 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Garden Center in Midland, Texas. Services entrusted to Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Raul Perez Flores, age 90, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, January 7th. Rosary will be Friday, January 23rd at 9 a.m., with a memorial mass to follow at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Commitment of cremains to follow at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 22nd. Couple's marriage is mired in the doldrums of middle age. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been together 30-plus years. When our love was new, it was all smiles, hand-holding, and thrills when we saw each other after a long day of work or school, and I guess that's normal. Now, 3 kids and 3 grandkids later, we're edging past our mid-50s, and there isn't much left. There are no more smiles and no more hand-holding, only 2 sad adults. We still love each other. Neither of us wants to be apart from the other, but we don't know how to bring back happiness. We hardly touch, and neither of us remembers the last time we smiled or even really laughed. We sit in the same room, living 2 completely different lives. I am partially disabled, so there are no more long walks or outside activities, which we used to do 20 years ago. We are now wondering, is this the rest of our lives? Are we going to spend the next 20-plus years in a depressing marriage in which we love each other but no longer have anything in common? Our youngest daughter is 8, and our youngest grandson is 5. We watch the kids, 15, 9, 8, 5, in the evening, so our eldest can work. Is there any hope for us? Signed, Sad Spouse in New York. Dear Sad Spouse, you say that you and your husband love each other. There is hope for reviving your marriage if you agree to go to couples counseling together. Marriage involves more than smiles, hand-holding, and thrills. It is a deep and caring partnership. Few couples can sustain the excitement of their honeymoon years. You and your husband have already done the hard work. Now you need to find your way back together. Dear Abby, my husband and I were dining with friends in a high-end restaurant. The food was great, and so was the conversation. My husband leaned close to me and whispered, "She's brushing her teeth." I glanced to my left. I had thought the gal at the next table was just using a toothpick. No, she was vigorously brushing with a full-sized toothbrush. After about a minute, she placed the toothbrush into a cosmetic bag and pulled out a denture container. She then proceeded to insert and adjust her retainer. We were flabbergasted. Never in all my years have I seen such appalling table manners. Perhaps we shouldn't have been staring, but it was one of those moments in which you are frozen to the spot. Abby, the restaurant has very nice bathrooms. What is happening to our society? Signed, Shocked in the South. Dear Shocked, I understand why this woman's performance stopped you cold. But please don't blame society for her ignorance of the rules of etiquette, which dictate that to avoid grossing out those around us in public, we should excuse ourselves from the table and take care of our oral hygiene privately in the restroom if needed. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.